50th anniversary. Hicks walked in through the kitchen door of Greta's house to see Shaw and Wendy at her island, hunched over the books and papers spread all over it, studying. Corinne was nowhere to be seen, probably in the living room on the phone with her new boyfriend, a recent development that didn't make Hicks happy. And Mamie and Greta were bending over pots at the stove. They'd started to do this after Thanksgiving, come to her home for dinner because Greta liked having them all there. He didn't know exactly why, since she had all of them at his house, except for the fact it was part of who she was, having a bent to take care of people she cared about, and there was something in it for her to do in her own space. So now, a couple of times in a way Hicks knew there'd be more, the kids and Hicks came to her. Then again, the kids liked her house. Greta had made them comfortable there from the moment they'd walked in the door Thanksgiving night. Not to mention, there was a fully stocked kitchen in all the ways there could be, and Greta made more than just great breakfasts. So his kids knew they'd get a good meal that wasn't takeout, delivery, or its origins were mostly from a box. But that wasn't the only reason they did it.
"Hey, Dad,"
Shaw greeted.
"Hey, Mr. Drake,"
Wendy called. Greta looked over her shoulder at him and smiled. Mamie whirled and cried.
"Hey, Daddy."
"Hey, guys," Hicks said, coming in, shrugging off his jacket and moving around the room to lift a hand and squeeze the back of Shaw's neck, get Mamie's hug when she danced to him, and bend in to touch his lips to Greta's mouth. "We need a second," he told her quietly when he'd pulled away. She stared into his eyes and nodded. He retraced his steps to go to the living room and jerked up his chin to Corinne before he threw his jacket on the back of the couch. Curled in Greta's armchair, his daughter grinned at him and gave him a little wave before she went back to her conversation, curling a lock of her hair around her finger. He unbuckled his gun belt and started up the steps, going to Greta's room where he hung it on the hook inside her closet. Coming out of that closet to see her walking into the room, eyes on him.
"Is everything okay?"
she asked. He moved into her space, putting his hands to her hips. "Right. You filed for that protection order on your mom and the judge granted a 14-day order ex parte, yeah?"
"I know,"
she told him, looking like she spoke even while holding her breath. "Yeah, you know. What you need to know now is that we haven't been able to find her to serve the order. I called Becker. He told me he scraped her off and has no idea where she is. He didn't sound happy to be talking about her. So my guess is she finally did some shit that made him find his way free of whatever hold she had on him, and he's done with her."
"Not great news for Mom, but I'm not in the mood to care that my mother lost her meth-cooking boyfriend, so..."
She didn't finish that, but did lift her brows in request he get to the point. "If she isn't served, sweetheart, the order is ineffective. She needs to be aware that the order has been issued. If she isn't, it hasn't officially been processed. And she needs to have that order served so that 14 days can play out so you can return to the judge and request a permanent one."
"Do you want me to call Mom, ask her to come around?"
she asked. "Hell no," he answered.
"Then what are you saying?"
"I'm just saying, she pulls shit, gets near you, takes pictures after she's been served by a protection order. That pushes her into felony territory. But if she hasn't been served, she can still do whatever the hell she wants."
"Awesome,"
she muttered sarcastically. "She doesn't have a job. She's not at home. She lost her sugar daddy. Maybe she took off," Hicks suggested hopefully.
"Maybe,"
Greta replied skeptically. He bent in and touched his lips to her forehead before moving back. "Seeing as the process servers from McCook County are me and my deputies, not thinking we'll give up on this one." That made her grin. Hicks grinned back. She watched his mouth a beat before she looked again to his eyes.
"We have kids to feed,"
she reminded him. "Yeah," he murmured. She lifted a hand to his neck, rolled up on her toes, and kissed the bottom of his jaw. She then rolled back, and they held hands to the top of the stairs. He let her go so Greta could walk down before him. They managed to pry Corinne's phone from her ear to sit down to eat. Then they sat at Greta's awesome table and had a family dinner.
You need to call Hope. We need to know what she's buying them from these lists. We shouldn't double up.
Greta was sitting across from him at his desk at the department, her head bent as she shuffled through the papers in her hands. His kids' Christmas gift wish lists. Doing this bossing him. I'll get on that right away, he muttered, and her eyes shot to his.
This is serious, Hickson.
Of course it is, he assured. She gave him a hard stare to assess if he found her amusing, which he did. But he figured he'd manage to hide that when she raised the lists and shook them in the air.
We also need to be careful to go equal. It wouldn't be cool to make it bigger than what she gives them since there are two of us.
Babe, they're going to be at their grandparents' house Christmas Eve night getting spoiled rotten. Dropped at my place at the end of that to wake up and get spoiled rotten on Christmas morning, then heading to Hope's to get spoiled rotten Christmas night. With all that, I don't think anyone is going to be able to keep track of who spoils them more rotten.
It'll be noted,
she returned. He leaned into his folded arms on his desk and reminded her. Hope's letting that kind of shit go.
I know she is, Greta replied. And I know it has to be hard on her. The holiday is going to make it harder. So we shouldn't do even the littlest thing to make it even harder.
He stared at the woman he loved, having reason once again to love her more before he sat back and said quietly, I'll call Hope and we'll get it straight.
Thank you, Hicks,
she replied quietly. It was time to move on to something else. I'm setting up the guest room, he declared.
Okay.
She returned, sounding confused. My folks come visit every once in a while. They don't have plans to hit town until the weather shifts, since they're not big fans of snow, which is why they now live in Florida. But Andy can't sleep on the sectional anymore when he's over. I know he doesn't mind, and that just means he's closer to the TV and Shaw and they can play video games every waking moment they're together. But the man should have his own space when he's at home, so we'll set it up for him. I'm sure it'll be cool with him that we use it as a guest room when he's not around. It was Greta staring at Hickson when he got done talking. And the way she was doing it, he felt in a number of areas in his body, his gut and chest, the most prominent.
What?
He whispered when she didn't speak.
Can we shut the blinds to that window and do something probably very illegal on your desk?
That he felt in his dick. No. He unfortunately had to answer.
Shame,
she murmured. But the minute the kids are back with Hope, you can do something not illegal to me in my bed and I'll return that favor. She gave him a look he also felt in his dick.
It's gonna be so good it'll feel illegal, Smokey.
Then I'll look forward to that, sugar. She smiled at him. He smiled back and decided it was time to move them on to something else again, or he'd be sitting behind his desk at work with a raging hard-on. You want to cook for the kids tonight or go out and... He didn't finish because a sharp rap sounded on his window. His head jerked that way, and the warmth in his chest and gut vanished when he saw Bette standing there, her back to the window, her hand to the butt of her firearm in its unclipped holster, and her eyes glued toward the front of the department. Hicks's gaze immediately moved there, and he went entirely still for half a beat before he was out of his chair, his voice low and abrasive as he ordered, You do not move from that seat, Greta.
Hickson,
she whispered, but she didn't move, and he knew this even though he didn't pry his eyes from the window as he quickly walked across the room. He shut the door behind him and just as quickly moved down the hall. He slowed his gait when he hit the mouth of it and swiftly assessed the situation. Donna was 5 feet from the left of her desk, clearly having been stopped by what was happening in the process of walking in from the back. Her hand was on her firearm, also in its holster, eyes locked on reception. Hal was up and to one side, behind the reception desk, legs braced apart, one in front of the other in a modified SWAT, firearm out, up, and aimed at reception. Larry was the same, behind his desk, and he was ordering,
Drop the duffel and put your hands where we can see them.
And just inside the door stood a very large, very tall man with straggling wild light brown hair, a weathered face, wearing a canvas jacket with a big duffel slanted across his back. He was unmoving, and his eyes were not at the guns pointed at him
or the further threats from the deputies who were ready to unholster their weapons. They were on him.
"Drop the duffel and put your hands where we can see them," Larry shouted.
"Larry,"
Hicks called loudly but calmly, moving in front of Betts slowly, making his way to the aisle, his arms down by his sides, his right elbow hitched up slightly, but his hand was not on his gun.
"Boss,"
Larry started.
"Lower your weapons,"
Hicks ordered. Hal's
"Boss,"
was terse.
"Do it, Hal,"
Hicks commanded as he made his way deliberately down the center aisle, not taking his attention from the man just inside the door, who still had not moved. He didn't check to see if Larry and Hal had obeyed his order. He just kept walking with his attention locked on the man at the front until he was standing 2 feet from the swinging half door. He braced and heard Hal's clipped
"Fucking shit!"
and Larry's
"God damn it!"
that came when the man moved. But the guy just walked directly to the reception desk, lifted his hand, and lowered it to the desk.
He engaged his other hand when a bald piece of paper fell out of the first.
He smoothed it out, spreading it open. Then he took a step back, leaving it there. It was one of the artist's sketched pictures of him they'd sent out as notice to homeless shelters.
"Is that you?"
Hicks asked him. The man didn't speak.
"Are you here to turn yourself in?"
Hicks asked. The man said nothing.
"Did you kill Nat Calloway?"
Hicks pressed. The man stood still and stared into Hicks's eyes. An unpleasant thrill chased down his spine when Hicks saw the man's eyes were empty, void, hollow. "He had a wife and 2 children, Hicks told him quietly. Nothing came from the man. Not a movement, not a sound, not a change in expression. Except one thing. A tear fell from his left eye. Shit.
"We need to take your duffel. We need to take your jacket. We need to pat you down. We need to cuff you. And then we'll need to arrest you,"
Hicks told him, voice calm and still quiet. The man moved. The room tensed. The duffel dropped. Hicks let out a breath, and then another one when the jacket dropped. The guy lifted his long arms and put his hands behind his head, his gaze never leaving Hicks's.
"Careful and gentle, men,"
he ordered as Hal and Larry moved around him. Hicks followed them, going through the swinging half door to stand with his hand now on his firearm as Larry got behind the guy, and Hal took his brother's back with his hand also on his holstered gun.
"Read him his rights, deputy.
Go slow," he instructed, then called,
"Donna."
"Here, boss,"
she said from close.
"Get the defense attorney here and call the court psychologist,"
he ordered, not losing eye contact with Nathan Calloway's killer.
"Do we have a court psychologist?"
Donna asked. "Find one," Hicks bit out.
"Right,"
he heard her mutter as Larry finished with reading the man his Miranda rights.
"Do you understand your rights?"
Larry asked. Hicks butted in.
"You can just nod."
The man took 2 beats, then jerked up his chin. Hicks nodded.
"Take him back."
He moved out of their way as they carefully pushed the guy forward.
"Process him."
Hal held open the door. Larry guided him through. Hal fell in behind Larry as they took him to the back. Hicks followed them until he got to Betts.
"You monitor that. Every second, every move, holster clipped, Betts,"
he commanded in a low tone.
"That guy is big, and that guy is unpredictable, and Hal and Larry need you as backup. He gets loose and gets the jump on you. I don't want him to have a clear shot to your gun. You need to use it, you can unclip it."
"Yeah, boss,"
she murmured, moving directly toward where Hal and Larry rounded the corner to get where they did their fingerprints and mugshots in the back corner of the department.
"I get these calls done,"
Donna started, standing with the phone to her ear but her eyes to Hicks.
"I on that too?"
"Absolutely. But you and Betts give him space. I do not want that man to feel crowded or threatened beyond what I'm guessing he knew was going to happen."
Donna nodded, looked toward the back, and Hicks moved straight to his office. Greta was getting up slowly as he opened the door, and her face was white as a sheet.
"Is that the guy who..."
I need you out of here. I need you to keep this quiet, but I need you somewhere safe, and right now, that is not here. She immediately started gathering her jacket and purse, even as her face got even paler.
Is it not safe for...
Baby, no questions. I gotta escort you out, then I gotta do a lot of other shit. She nodded and didn't delay. She got her jacket on, her purse over her shoulder, and she scooted out with Hicks dogging her heels. He got her out of the front door and around the side of the building where he stopped her, bent in, pressed his mouth hard against hers, and pulled back, muttering, I'll call you later.
I love you, Hicks.
He froze. They hadn't said it. He'd been waiting for the right moment. He felt it from her and guessed she was waiting for the same. Then again, she sang Glitter in the Air to him, so she'd already said it.
Best man I've ever met,
she whispered, rolled up on her toes, pressed her lips hard against his, and rolled back. She then walked swiftly in her high-heeled boots down the sidewalk, cleared of the snow they got yesterday.
He is mute, due to a medical condition or a trauma. I don't know. He'll have to be examined,
the psychologist told Hicks and Donna outside the interrogation room.
He's also suffering a variety of other conditions, none of which I can accurately diagnose. Considering he's mute, he's big and he scares the bejesus out of me.
Doc, Hicks began, but stopped speaking when the psychologist lifted her hands and shook them.
He needs a full medical evaluation and a full psychiatric evaluation. However, the one thing he's given me, his attorney, and your deputy is that he killed Nathan Calloway. He jerks up his chin every time it's mentioned. He jerks up his chin when he's asked if he understands the meaning of that. He jerks up his chin every time he's asked if he understands why he's been arrested. I've asked him to write down what he wants to say, if he has anything to say, and he's refused. For whatever reason, physical, psychological, or some of both, that man is deeply disturbed. However, in my professional opinion, he understands completely that he's done wrong. He saw that picture of himself and knew you knew who he was and you were looking for him. But my sense is he's not here because he thought you'd find him. If that man doesn't want to be found, he could get lost forever. He's here to atone for it.
This was not news to them, except the last. They'd watched it all in the observation room, with Hicks watching from inside the room while Larry asked the questions. Hicks turned to Donna. Set up a supervised physical. The psych eval can happen here.
On it,
Donna muttered and took off. He looked back to the psychologist. Your professional opinion. We ever gonna know why he did what he did? She shrugged. It wasn't casual. She was taking this seriously. She simply didn't know.
I honestly can't say. He doesn't trust me to open up to me, which isn't a surprise. I haven't had enough time with him and I've never done this. I did my best, but the man frightens me and I'm afraid I couldn't completely hide it in a way he surely read it. It may be you'll need to do the psych eval somewhere else so he doesn't feel trapped or cornered and he might open up. But he may never open up. He might not even know how. Again, I can't say for certain.
He's arrested, an unknown who's committed a violent act and a flight risk, Hicks pointed out. Not feeling good about taking him to a doctor, so I'm not feeling good about doubling up on that to take him to see a shrink.
Yes, but this man is not one who spends much time surrounded by four walls. Just being inside, my hunch, is costing him. It being a sheriff's department isn't helping matters.
He essentially turned himself in.
That's the atonement I told you about. This isn't easy for him, but he's doing it. If someone can get him to a place, he'll find some way to communicate in the presence of someone he can trust.
She shook her head.
I just don't know.
I can't let you be alone with that man, even observed, and even with his attorney present, and even as he is now, chained to a table. When I say that, not you or anyone, Hicks told her. We have some idea of what he's capable of. His size? I'm not testing that.
I know, and I appreciate that. And I don't know even if he was lounging unencumbered out under the sky if he'd share. My suggestion is the hospital will have psychiatrists on staff. Get one. Another suggestion, a male one, to do the eval there. One visit, double duty.
but every indication he's giving is that you're correct. He turned himself in for the crime of murdering Nathan Calloway, and he's here to let justice take its course. She got closer. You might never have answers, Sheriff, but you have your man. Without her able to give him much more, he nodded. You want me to hang around, or... She began. You can go, but I'd like to be open to give you a call if we need to, he told her.
Anytime.
Obliged, he muttered. She gave him a close look, a small, forlorn smile. Then she turned and walked out. Hicks turned to the window to interrogation, one of two one-way windows that looked inside, and saw the man staring at his hands cuffed to the steel ring in the middle of the table. He'd allowed them also to shackle his legs. The defense attorney was leaning toward him, speaking. Larry was against the wall, giving them space, but watching. Hal and Betts were in the observation room monitoring with the recording equipment on. Nat's killer was right there, right in his interrogation room, chained to a table. The man with the answers. The end of it. And studying him, Hicks didn't feel the relief he thought he'd feel. Mostly because all he could think about when his mind had opportunity to let anything else in was that tear sliding down his craggy cheek. On that thought, he pushed through the door. Larry and the attorney looked at him. So did their guy. Hicks took the chair the psychologist had been sitting in across the table from their perp. He looked him in his eyes and saw right down to an empty soul. He then put his hands on the table, but other than that, didn't move in his direction at all. In order to do right by you and by Nat's wife, we need to be thorough, sir, he said quietly. This means my deputies are going to have to take you to a medical doctor to be examined. That got him nothing. A psychiatrist will either be coming to this department to speak with you, or you'll be seeing one at the hospital, he continued. More nothing. Do you understand these things? Hicks asked. Finally, he got a chin jerk. Good, Hicks muttered, and held his gaze before he whispered. There's a woman who's now raising two kids alone who needs answers. You can find it in you, too. The guy thumped the side of his fist lightly on the table, the chains rattled, and Hicks grew tense, as did the room. But he looked down at the man's hands and saw one finger pointed at the legal-sized pad of paper there. Hicks shoved it his way. The man put his open hand on top of the pad, then turned it, palm up. And since they didn't leave a pen that could be used as a weapon lying close to him, Hicks looked to his attorney. I think we should get this gentleman's evals out of the way before... The attorney tried. The man thumped his fist on the table harder this time, then opened his hand. The attorney sighed, then leaned in and put a pen in his hand. Hicks didn't look to the attorney, to Larry, to the observation window. He looked right at the pad of paper. The guy wrote on it, set the pen down, then flipped it around to Hicks. On it, he'd scratched in shaky but careful capital letters, I did it. It took no time to read that, but Hicks barely got that job done before the guy was flipping the pad around again and writing. He set the pen aside one more time and turned the paper Hicks's way. Hicks read it. I'm sorry. A prickle slid over his scalp. Hicks looked to his face and whispered, Why? The man's blank eyes stared into his. I'd like to be able to tell her why, Hicks shared. The man continued to stare into his eyes before he slumped in his seat, tucked his chin in his throat, and stared at his bound hands. You got your confession, Sheriff. Now get this man his evaluations, his attorney demanded. It's clear where this is leading, and we should get there as soon as we can because this man needs help, not a stay in a penitentiary. Hicks looked to him, then to their guy. He was still staring at his hands. You didn't want to, did you? Hicks guessed quietly. The man stared at his hands. He gave you a ride and you were grateful. You were tired. It was hot. You wanted to ride a while. You wanted out from under the sun. He gave you that ride and you were grateful. The man stared at his hands, but his shoulders pressed into his ears slightly. He'd been grateful. What came next? Hicks asked. The man said nothing.
Sheriff?
The attorney butted in. What came next? Hicks pushed.
Sheriff,
the attorney clipped.
This gentleman needs evaluation before you ask another question.
What came next? Hicks repeated. The guy didn't speak.
Sheriff, I really must ask you,
the attorney tried.
Why did you kill Nat Calloway?
Hicks pressed. The guy suddenly moved, making Hicks's body go tight. But he just grabbed the pen, pulled the paper to him, and wrote in a diagonal scrawl that was nothing like the careful block letters he'd written before. He set the pen aside and shoved the pad at Hicks, not turning it like he'd done the other two times he'd shared. Hicks reached out and turned it himself.
I don't know. Can you tell me?
Hicks's eyes cut to his face. There was nothing there. Hollow. No, Hicks said quietly. But if you let the doctor see to you, maybe we can find out. The man jerked up his chin.
Can this be done now?
The attorney asked impatiently.
It can be done,
Hicks murmured, about to get up, but the guy grabbed the pen and reached for the pad. He scrawled, set the pen aside, and shoved the paper to Hicks. Hicks stood and turned the pad his way again. It's never done. Hicks looked at him and replied,
No, man, it isn't. The way it goes, it never will be.
He turned his attention to Larry. Let's get him in a cell and get him a meal. Larry nodded. Hicks looked to the attorney, to the empty soul who wandered alone in order to protect the world from the unknown, inexplicable urges that lie within, the man who killed Nat Calloway. And then he walked out the door. Greta and Shaw hung back when he walked through the back door that night.
But Mamie was on him in a way he knew they'd been watching for him to return home.
And Corinne was on him 2 seconds later. He held his girls to him, but his eyes were on Shaw and Greta, who were standing in the mouth to the mudroom, Shaw's arm around Hicks's woman. Shaw gave his sisters some time before he called.
Guys, let Dad take his jacket off. Dad, you want a beer?
Yeah, kid,
Hicks answered as Corinne slid away, but Mamie held on.
You okay, Daddy?
Corinne asked.
Yeah, honey,
Hicks answered gently. Mamie leaned into him, arms still around him, just arching her back and looking up at him.
Yeah?
She asked for confirmation. He glided his hand over her hair.
Yeah, baby. Now let me get my jacket off, okay? You can keep on hugging me after that.
Okay.
She agreed and did just that, unclamping her hold on him for just long enough for him to shed his jacket and put it on a hook, then clamping onto him again so he didn't bother to take his gun belt off and he had to shuffle from the mudroom down the short hall and into the kitchen with his baby girl attached to him. The smells he was experiencing hit him before he hit the kitchen, though, and he was reminded that Greta had been in his office to meet him for lunch, something he didn't have. He'd only had the coffee that Ida had brought in from Baby Cakes.
What's that?
He asked, his eyes to the stove.
Greta showed us how to make Mexican skillet casserole,
Corinne told him.
Excellent,
Hicks muttered.
We'll go set the table. Help me, ma'am, Cor,
Shaw said, handing Hicks a beer.
Sure,
Corinne replied, moving to a cupboard.
Ma'am, babe?
Shaw urged gently, holding his hand out to his little sister. She hesitated before she let her dad go, took her brother's hand, and held it even while Shaw went to the drawer and got out the cutlery. The kids left. Greta, standing at the stove sprinkling cheese on a skillet filled with what looked like heaven in ground beef form, turned her head his way. He set his beer aside and moved right into her space. Bag of cheese still in hand, she wrapped her arms around him.
You good?
She whispered in his ear.
Better, he whispered back.
You tell Faith?
He nodded, her hair catching on his whiskers, as he did it with his jaw pressed to the side of her head. Her hair looks great. She gave him a squeeze and held on. Hicks held her back, and after a time, he tipped his chin down to put his lips to her ear. That man is broken.
He gave that impression.
But whatever snapped in him to make him kill Nat annihilated him. She just held him tighter,
It's the only time a murder was solved where the answer makes sense, he shared.
How's that?
She asked softly. My guess? Even he can't control the demons that moved him to do it. He's just got him. And if he was holding them back before, when they took over in that moment, whatever he had left, they took it with them. Only thing he's got is the will to survive and the remorse he feels for taking a man's life. In other words, there is no answer. There is no reason. It's incomprehensible, just like it always is. She started stroking his back. After a time, she said,
I need to feed my man and his kids. They insisted on waiting, but it's late, and I heard Shaw's stomach rumbling, so we should get down to that.
What she meant was, I need to give my man normal with his woman and his kids around, fill his belly, and be in a position to assess where his head is at so I can do something about it if I need to, and we should get down to that. Yeah, he replied, but didn't let go. She didn't shift or move an inch. In other words, she didn't let go either. The Drake family.
Hey,
Shaw whispered urgently, catching Mamie, who had her mind on other things and was heading into the kitchen. Corinne was already pressed to her brother's back. The three of them stood, frozen in the open doorway to the kitchen, watching their dad holding Greta. No, watching Greta hold their dad.
Let's give them time, Corinne whispered.
As one, they all slunk backwards on silent feet. Mamie leaned against Shaw as Corinne adjusted the place settings, so they were all just so, and they waited patiently until their dad walked in with his gun belt gone, an open beer in his hand, and an oven glove on the other hand that was holding the big, cast-iron skillet Greta had brought over to cook in. Get drinks, kids. Let's get this grub in our stomachs, he ordered. They moved out as Greta moved in, carrying a big wooden bowl that she'd also brought over of salad.
Corinne, can you grab the salad dressings from the fridge? And Shaw, can you get the cornbread out of the oven? Just put it on the hot pad by the stove. I'll come in and deal with it.
You got it,
Shaw muttered.
No problem,
Corinne said.
I'll get drinks. What does everyone want?
Mamie asked as she entered the kitchen. Shaw and Corinne did as Greta asked, and Mamie got the drinks. They sat down at the family table. They all watched closely as their father tried to make it normal while they ate Greta's amazing food. But they did what they could to take their dad's mind off things, talking about school, telling stories, anything. It never got normal, but they gave it their best shot. And their dad, being the kind of dad he was, didn't bother to hide he appreciated it. Hickson. The call came when they were all cleaning up. He saw who it was on the screen and muttered he had to take it as he walked out of the room, through the living room, out to the front porch, doing it sliding his thumb on the screen, taking the call, putting the phone to his ear. His storm door closed behind him as he answered. Hey, Hope.
Hey, Hickson,
she replied gently. You okay? He asked.
That was my question, honey.
He looked to his boots. There was the woman he'd married.
It's good it's over, yeah?
She asked. Yeah.
Greta and the kids taking care of you?
He looked to the street, the snow covering his lawn, his walk and driveway clear. They are, Hope, thanks.
How'd the wife take it?
She inquired. Confusion. The guy is off. But there was also some relief. Blatt's semi-related to her. I called him. He was there when Larry and I visited. He took over when we left. He can be an arrogant ass, but I think he's got this.
That's good,
she murmured. Yeah, he agreed.
Okay, I didn't want to take up too much of your time or anything. I just heard, and I've been thinking of you.
That's appreciated, honey. She was silent for a few beats before she rushed out.
Okay. You probably need a bourbon about now, so I'll let you go. Just take care of yourself, yeah, Hicks?
I will. You too.
I will. Tell everyone I said hey.
I'll do that.
Night, Hicks.
Night. She hung up. He dropped his hand with the phone in it and stared at the street. When he noticed his breath come out in a visible puff, he cleared his throat, shoved his phone in his back pocket, and went inside. He was up. His knees were up, but Greta was straddling him, riding him, her fingers in his hair, her lips attached to his so the noises she made were muted since they sounded down his throat. Her rhythm was gentle, but he could tell she was working to keep it that way. So he put his hands to her waist, lifted his hips, and took her to her back before he threaded the fingers of one hand through hers, and he stopped going gentle.
"You're too good at this,"
she breathed against his lips. He could not believe it in that moment for a variety of reasons, but what she said made him smile. "What?" he asked.
"It's hard to stay quiet,"
she pushed out. He slanted his head and took her mouth to help with that, even as he ran a hand down her chest, snagging her nipple hard with his thumb, forcing a gasp into his mouth, thus making it harder. She lifted her knees high at his sides, and he went deeper, which felt so fucking good it made him go faster. He slid his lips to her ear. "You love me?" he whispered.
"Yes,"
she panted. "You know I love you?" She tilted her hips up and held his hand laced in hers so tight he felt pain at the webbing.
"Yes,"
she repeated breathlessly. He lifted his head and looked down at her indistinct face, the shadows of her sunshine and honey hair somehow bright even in the dark. "Good, baby, because I love you a lot."
"You can't."
She tipped her knees back farther. He slid in deeper, and she lifted her head to put her mouth to his, when that caused a low groan to rumble out of him.
"Imagine how awesome that is, baby. But can we have this conversation when I'm not about to?"
She didn't finish. Her neck arched, her mouth opened, and her pussy seized his pulsing cock as she climaxed under him. He watched. He enjoyed it. And then he kissed her. So when his world exploded, the grunt it forced from him was quietened by her mouth. Hicks came down slow, made sure she came down slow, and kept his fingers wound through hers long after, kissing her, working her neck, feeling her work his, her free hand moving on him, his doing the same. Finally, he found her ear with his lips and whispered, "At last." Again, her fingers convulsed in his hand before she repeated, "At last, Hickson." He kissed her throat, pulled her out, and rolled them both out of bed. He got rid of the condom, cleaned up, pulled on some pajama bottoms. She pulled on panties and her nightie. They slid into bed together, and she curled into his side. "Love you, Greta," he murmured to the ceiling. He felt her kiss his chest before she settled back in.
"Love you too, Hicks."
She burrowed deeper into him, and after some time, he felt her weight fall into him with sleep. Hicks closed his eyes and saw hollow, but he felt Greta. So eventually, he followed her. Chapter 25. Seventh Circle. Hickson.
"Come around,"
Hicks rumbled.
"Mmm,"
Greta mumbled to his back before she took a nip of flesh at his lat. His hips pulsed into her hand.
"Come around," he growled.
She slid her lips to the side of his neck, pressing her tits in his back, and bossed.
"Keep your hands to the headboard, Hickson."
"Greta," he warned, fucking her fist that she kept wrapped tight around his cock, her other hand cupping and squeezing his balls, the whole of her pressed to his back, her lips on his neck. It was too hot. He couldn't take more.
"This feel illegal?"
she asked. "No, it felt phenomenal. Fuck it." He took his hands from where they were, curled around his headboard, where he'd promised to keep them, and twisted, his movement making her lose hold and throwing her back. He caught her at the waist, hauled her around to his front, then up. His other hand going to his dick, he pulled her down. The head of his cock slid through her wet as she wound her legs around his hips, and he found her. He surged up as he yanked her down, and her head flew back with her.
Yes!
He walked on his knees until he had her back tight to the headboard, and then he hammered her.
This feel illegal, Gumdrop?
He asked.
Yes, baby,
she gasped.
Tit, Greta, he ordered.
She took a hand from clenching his ass to put it to her breast and lift it to him. He kept pounding inside her as he bowed his back and sucked it hard into his mouth. She jolted in his arms. He felt that jolt in his cock, and not because her pussy spasmed around it, and she started shifting her hips to meet his thrusts. He circled her nipple and muttered,
"Other one,"
against it. She exchanged hands, one now in his hair, one to her other breast, and lifted it for him. He took it with his mouth. She ground into his drives.
"Baby,"
she whimpered. He let her nipple go, quickly slid his middle finger between her lips and out, wetting it. He then put his lips to hers and kept hold of her with one arm. The other hand he slid down her spine, over her ass, through the cleft, and he dug that middle finger up her ass to the second knuckle. That did it.
"Hickson,"
she breathed, bucked, cried out, and her pussy throbbed around him. Her reaction took him over the edge, and he drilled her against the headboard, shoving his finger all the way in at the back, only to hear her moan and feel her legs wrap tighter around him as he exploded. Thankfully, now able to do it ungloved since she'd got her ass on the pill, shooting deep inside. Hicks came down with his face in her neck, sliding his finger gently out, but keeping her planted on his dick.
"No fair,"
she muttered hazily into the skin of his neck.
"No fair,"
he asked, grinning into the skin of hers.
"You hadn't won the bed wrestling match of the Millennium Part 2 to earn your right to take my ass."
He lifted his head, looked down at her beautiful, sated face, and asked an unnecessary question. "You didn't like it?" She rolled her eyes and didn't bother to answer his unnecessary question. He pressed her into the headboard, tightening his hold on her with his arms, getting her complete attention.
"That wasn't taking your ass, sweetheart. That wasn't even fingering your ass. That was staking a future claim when I win our bed wrestling match of Millennium Part 2.
"I'm totally buying lube,"
she declared.
"Good idea,"
he grinned at her. Her eyes narrowed.
"For you."
He busted out laughing.
"I'm so gonna win, Hicks."
"Right,"
he snickered through his continuing laughter.
"You'll see."
He did his best to sober, was shit at it, so was still chuckling when he said,
"You're right. We'll definitely see."
"I should have spanked you when I had your hands to the headboard,"
she snapped. He put his mouth to hers and held her eyes.
"Now we're totally having our rematch, 'cause that's a good idea. And you got a great ass, baby. But it'll be pretty, taking my cock. All pink."
Her eyes got big right before she nipped his lip and did it hard. He took her mouth. She smacked his ass. He pulled her off his cock, tossed her to her belly on the bed and covered her, shoving both hands beneath her, each going separate directions. All this while burying his face in her neck. And from there, Hicks commenced proving to his woman he could still go all night. They both had work the next day. They both dragged their asses all day that next day, and they both thought it was totally worth it.
"Okay, I got the stocking stuffer candy, and the stocking stuffers are all bagged in different bags to make it easy to stuff them tomorrow night after the kids go to sleep. But they're not wrapped. Andy wants to help me do that. We'll do it tomorrow while the kids are with Hope at Jep and Marie's. But I got the tissue paper. Christmas plaid for Shaw, snowflakes for Corinne, candy canes for Mamie. I already wrapped Andy's in star paper. Your paper, I'm not gonna say. You'll see on the day. But that's also done,"
Greta prattled. Hicks was sitting at a stool at his kitchen island,
Corinne, Mamie, and Greta had chosen his new stools. Shaw, Andy, and Hicks had approved them, but it was Hicks who bought them, watching his woman pace around the island. She had a pen in one hand and a huge legal pad in her other that she was flipping through, back and forth, in what Hicks would suspect Santa would do with his list if he used a pad and not a huge-ass scroll. "Babe," he tried to cut in to find a gentle way to tell her he didn't give a shit what kind of tissue paper his kids' stocking stuffers were wrapped in, and they should also get a move on because the sun was setting and they needed to go get her brother.
"Nuts in their shells, check. Always have to have nuts with shells so you can use the nutcracker," she declared. "We're having coke-glazed ham." She opened the fridge. "Ham and fridge, check. 2 liter of coke, check. 4 more 2 liters of coke for you, Shaw and Andy, check. Diet for us girls, check. Hash brown casserole." She closed the fridge and opened the freezer. "Hash browns, check." She shuffled to the pantry, tapping the end of her pen to the pad as she called it down. "Cookie stuff, check. Roll mix, check. Stuff to make Chex Mix, check."
"Sweetheart," still tapping her pad with each check, she went on like she hadn't heard him, which she probably hadn't.
"Crackers, check. Chips, check."
Back across the room to the fridge, she opened.
"Deli meat, check. Blocks of cheese for crackers, check. Cheese slices for sandwiches, check. Grated cheese, check. Makings for cheese ball, check. Philadelphia cheese, check. 3 types of bread." Christ, there was more cheese in his house than all of Wisconsin.
"Greta," he pushed out through laughter. She whirled on him and abruptly changed subjects.
"Where's Mamie's bar?"
"Like I told you 3 times. Tommy's bringing it over Christmas morning, early. He's gonna put it up when he gets here. If we're still asleep, he's got a key."
"We won't be asleep. It's the law you don't get up past 5 o'clock Christmas Day. Will he be able to get here before 5?
She asked. "I know the law pretty well, baby, and I'm not sure that's the law," he told her through a smile he knew was immense because it was hurting his face.
"It's a Christmas law, Smokey, and only Santa gets to be the sheriff of that."
That was when his gut hurt from stopping himself from busting out laughing.
"Can Tommy show at, say, 4?
She requested. "Tommy's a 43-year-old, never-married, single guy who took a singles cruise last Christmas and, by his report, nailed 4 broads during this cruise. Do you think a man like that is getting up at 3:30 in the morning to drag a ballet bar across town and install it in his friend's basement?"
"It's Christmas, so yes,"
she sniffed. "I wouldn't get your hopes up on that, Gumdrop," he warned.
"I wouldn't call women broads again, Hickson," she returned. "I'd take you to task for that, but I'm in a Christmas mood."
Hicks could say for definite he hadn't missed her Christmas mood. "I didn't think bitches was the way to go," he teased, and she assumed a severe expression.
"You were right,"
she shared. "Or pieces of ass," he went on.
"You're right about that, too."
"Or asses he tapped," he kept at her.
"Hicks, the bar,"
she pushed. "He'll get here when he gets here. But he said early and the man owns a farm. His early will be early."
"If it isn't early, early, she'll hear the drill, Hicks."
"You can't muffle a drill, Greta." Suddenly, she threw up her hand with the pen, her other hand with the pad, and declared loudly.
"There has to be a big Christmas surprise. Corinne only wanted clothes, hair stuff, and makeup. Nothing big enough to make a huge do-over, except her new phone, which we agreed with Hope she could give her. Shaw wanted video games and money, so ditto with the to-do. Andy never gives a crap what anyone gives him because he's too excited for them to open what he got them. Your Christmas surprise is going to be a Boxing Day surprise after the kids and Andy are gone, because I don't think I'll be able to be quiet after you do what you do to me when you see me in it. Mamie's bar is our only surprise."
Hicks wasn't feeling amused anymore. "Let's go back to my Boxing Day surprise," he suggested in a growl. He had no clue what Boxing Day even was. He still wanted to know about a surprise.
She looked smug, a look he felt tighten in his crotch. She also sounded smug when she announced,
"We'll just say Santa has a variety of little helpers, and you're going to be glad one of them is sleeping in your bedroom."
"Sneak peek now," he decreed. She shook her head.
"We have to go get Andy."
"He can wait an hour. Or two."
"He always comes to me Christmas Eve, Hicks. Homemade pizza and viewings of Lethal Weapon to start the festivities. It's tradition. And it's getting late, so if we're missing something, we have to drop by the store on the way home with Andy."
"Babe," she interrupted him.
"We need to make sure we have everything. The Christmas feeding orgy starts tonight, and I'm not going to the grocery store if we're missing something after we get home, and you aren't either."
And thank Christ for that, since she'd sent him on 4 runs the last 3 days to prepare. He opened his mouth to say something, whatever that had to be, to get him a sneak peek of whatever his present was going to be, when the doorbell rang. He got off the stool, ordering, "I'll get that. You get your ass upstairs and get in my surprise." She shook her head.
"Not gonna happen, darling."
So it was lingerie. Please, Christ, make it a teddy. She had 3 teddies. He'd seen them all. He liked them all. Enough, he wanted another one. He stopped in the doorway to the kitchen. 30 minutes.
"Oh, no,"
she said softly, her eyes flaring.
"That would be an impossibility."
"Fuck." She smiled a wicked smile.
"Maybe I shouldn't have said anything."
The doorbell rang again. So Hicks muttered, "You knew exactly what you were doing." And he heard her equally wicked chuckle as he stalked to the door. The lead glass panes in the door obscured who was behind it, except for the fact whoever it was had big hair. Hicks didn't have a good feeling about that. His feeling was correct. When he opened the door and saw a tawny dare standing on his porch. She didn't waste any time.
"I want to see my daughter."
Shit. He had her. They hadn't yet served her, and he didn't have the papers. All his deputies had volunteered to find her in order to serve her, but it was Donna who won that job in an epic scissors-paper-rock battle that took 15 minutes. This meant Donna had the papers. Shit. Before he could think of what to say, she kept speaking.
"I know she probably doesn't want to see me, but it's Christmas, and I want to see my boy."
"Probably." "We're not doing this," he told her, beginning to close the door at the same time scanning his street, his hand going to his back pocket to get his phone.
"No!"
she shouted, and his eyes sliced back to her as she opened the storm, stepped in it, and put a hand up to press on his door. "Stand back, Miss Dare," he warned.
"I get it, she's done with me, but I want to see my boy. Take your hand off my door, Miss Dare, and remove yourself from my property." "I got him a present. It's in the car. I want to see him. I want to give it to him."
"Do you honestly think she gives one shit what you want?" he asked and went on. "And trust me, your boy wants nothing from you either. Since birth, Greta's given him everything he's needed. You didn't damage his brain so much he doesn't understand that. So he won't give a shit he gets anything from you now." He couldn't credit the wince his words got him. But before she could say anything or he could push the door closed, her eyes went over his shoulder.
"Greta? Greta, girl, I'm not here to cause problems," she said quickly. "I just want to see Andy."
"Greta, move out of sight," Hicks demanded. "Call Donna. Tell her Miss Dare is here and tell her she leaves before Donna gets here. The woman is driving a late model blue Honda Accord. Colorado plates. Plates that are expired." Tawny's eyes shot to him.
"What are you talking about?"
He didn't answer. He ordered, "Step back, Miss Dare."
"Okay. Just let me give you this present and I...
Her eyes went over his shoulder again.
"I got something for you too, girl."
"I'll say it once more. Step back," Hicks clipped. Greta obviously wasn't doing as he asked, because Tawny kept her attention over his shoulder, and something came over her face. Something strange, impossible to achieve, pugilistic, but defeated, entreating,
yet stubborn, sad, but hopeful. "I know you're done,"
she said quietly, all those things in her tone, too.
"You haven't unblocked me. They haven't put me back on the visitor list. But I got nothing, Greta. Kavanaugh ousted me. Got nothing, and it's Christmas. Not asking for much. Just to give you and Andy a little something." She tried an unpracticed smile. "And you love Christmas. Always did." "You're wrong. I hated it,"
Greta said coldly.
"Until Andy was two, and he could grasp a little bit what it meant."
Tawny's face fell, but she pushed.
"Just let me drop your presents. You can give Andy's to him. Though,"
Greta went on like Tawny hadn't spoken,
"only way I could give him anything was to steal from you. But it's miraculous how a $3 beat-up teddy bear from the Salvation Army can light up a 2-year-old kid." "I knew that was you,"
her mother muttered.
"Yep. Didn't remember to buy us presents, but you sure missed that $3 from your purse,"
Greta returned.
"It wasn't just one year you did that, Greta,"
Tawny fired back.
"And I never said shit, did I? I never got in your face about stealing from me so you could give Andy a Christmas." "Are you serious?"
Greta whispered. Hicks had the same question. He just didn't give a fuck about the bitch's answer. "This isn't gonna happen," Hicks growled, pushing on the door, and Tawny's boots actually slid his welcome mat. Greta and the girls got it online, so he didn't have to buy that. Across the porch, as she put her weight into keeping it open.
I wanna explain. I want you to understand why,"
she stated urgently. "Greta, call Donna," Hicks ordered.
"No, honey. I wanna know,"
Greta said. He looked over his shoulder at her. Her eyes were pinned on her mother, but she kept talking to him.
"She wants to explain. I want to hear it."
"Right, sweetheart, but I don't want this woman in my house," he shared, honestly. She looked at him and nodded.
"I get that. So I'll get my jacket."
Her attention returned to her mom.
"Stand out there. I'll be out in a minute." "Greta, it's cold, and—"
Tawny began.
"Mom? Do that or spend Christmas in one of Hicks's cells. You're trespassing. You have another arrest for that in this county. You also have a record. And you have a protection order as granted by a judge that you haven't yet been served. But he knows you've been stalking me and taking pictures. And we'll just say, you haven't made a friend of local law enforcement. Stand on the porch. I'll be out in a minute."
Greta's mom looked shocked.
"A protection order? You can't follow anyone around and take pictures of them with malicious intent, Mom. You did that. When you're served, if you continue to do anything to harm me in any way you can, it'll be handled as a felony."
The woman's face paled.
"You want to explain? I'll give you time,"
Greta granted.
"You have this, then it's over. No more chances, no more time, no more anything. If you don't leave me and Andy alone, I'll take it as far as I have to take it to make certain that you do."
Tawny's hand came off the door so fast, the pressure Hicks was putting on it meant it closed right in her face. He didn't think of that. He turned to Greta to watch her moving quickly toward the kitchen to get her coat in the mudroom. "Baby," he called after her, his hand at his back pocket to get out his phone as he followed her.
"I wasn't kidding. She gets this, then it's over,"
Greta said, not looking back at him. "Not sure this is a good idea," he told her.
"There's a half chance I'll get back out there and she'll be gone,"
Greta replied, hitting the mudroom and grabbing her coat. Time to call Donna. This he did at the same time he grabbed his jacket and shrugged it on, following her. Donna answered. He gave her the details, and he was doing this as he saw Tawny hadn't left. Greta moved out. Hicks moved out after her. "Gotta go now," Hicks said into his phone.
"Be there in 10, Max Hicks,"
Donna replied, reading the urgency in his tone. "Right," he muttered, and hung up. Tawny had her gaze to them.
"Reckon I'm about to be served, right, Sheriff?"
she asked snidely. "Is that more important at this juncture than speaking to your daughter?" Hicks returned. She glared at him, then looked to Greta.
"You got me, Mom. Last chance, after 38 years. to finally give me the answers for why you broke Andy, why you broke Keith and me, why you tried to break Hicks and me, eventually broke Keith and never faltered in your quest to do just that to me. If I could take back what happened to Andy, I would,
Greta's mother said softly.
Well, that makes you about 1/16th of a decent person. But nothing happened to Andy except you. You happened to Andy, Greta told her. You did that to him. So the appropriate words are, if I could take back what I did to Andy, I would.
The soft disappeared.
I paid for that, girl,
she hissed. Greta shook her head and turned to Hicks, who was standing just outside the closed door, murmuring, this is meaningless. He began to move to open the door for her, but Tawny cried,
no, don't. I don't got nothing, girl. I don't got nothing, except the two of you.
Greta gave her mother her attention.
Now give me one reason, one even infinitesimal reason, that would make me feel you earned me giving that first crap.
She swayed forward like she was going to move toward Greta, and Hicks coming forward to stand close to Greta's back wasn't what stopped her. She stopped herself, her gaze never leaving her daughter.
I'm your mama.
You are.
And?
Greta prompted. Tawny shook her head. Fast, short, little shakes, like she was trying to pry something loose to keep a hold on a daughter she'd never actually had.
I was supposed to have a different life,
she said.
Not be knocked up at 17 and thrown out of my ass by your grandparents?
Were you raped?
Greta asked unemotionally.
No!
Tawny snapped.
So you had consensual, unprotected sex with someone, decided not to abort the baby, but instead do your best to make the whole of her life a misery,
Greta deduced.
Look at me!
Tawny exclaimed, suddenly angry, lifting a hand, finger pointed to her face.
The life I led wasn't the life meant for me. I was supposed to have more. Be a model, be a movie star, be a singer like you. You got that from me too, Greta. I got chops. Choir director at school said I had more talent than any student he'd seen. I could have gone the distance. Maybe found a man who'd look after me the real way. Hold me close and not let me go. Then I got you. And all my chances were shot to shit.
So because you were attractive, you were supposed to live the big life. Not work for it, not earn it, not find a way to be happy with whatever you worked for or earned, but what? Be handed it because you aren't hard on the eyes? Then when I came along and ruined that, I had to pay for the fact that you're literally criminally conceited?
It's hard to bounce back from your dreams dying,
Tawny bit out.
Sorry, I wouldn't know about dreams, Mom. The way I grew up, I knew from early never to have any,
Greta retorted. At hearing that knowledge, Hicks couldn't beat back his snarl.
Well, it's hard,
Tawny shot back.
You had 14 years before Andy came along to accomplish that,
Greta noted.
And Andy was supposed to do that,
Tawny spat.
Yeah? How?
Greta asked.
His daddy was loaded. His daddy also wouldn't leave his fucking wife to make an honest woman out of me.
Andy's father is wealthy?
Greta whispered. And Hicks put a hand to her hip as he felt a different energy coming from her.
Don't get excited like I did, girl,
Tawny advised, now sounding word weary.
He was. He was also 27 years older than me. And now he's very dead. And he gave half his money to that cow he called a wife. And since the bitch couldn't give him kids, when I could, he gave the other half to some museum or something, so you won't get blood from that stone. Believe me, I tried.
Did he want something to do with Andy?
Greta asked.
He wasn't getting his shot at having a son without putting a ring on it, Greta. God, did I never teach you nothing?
Hicks didn't snarl at that. He stared at the woman in shock.
So he did,
Greta whispered.
In the end, I told him Andy wasn't his. Asshole believed that fast enough.
What, after you did that, did his wife want DNA and you couldn't assure he was the daddy?
Greta asked. Now the woman was offended.
You take me for a slut, girl?
Yes.
Jesus!
Tawny hissed.
No! 'Cause lawyers like to get paid even before the big payout actually happens. At least the good ones do. The other kind are shit and can't get nothing done.
So you actually harassed this poor woman, whose husband you slept with, in order to take his money, harassing her after the fact in order to take another shot at getting her husband's money.
Didn't work,
Tawny muttered.
You do know, Mom, that this isn't making me feel real good about standing out in the cold listening to your crap.
I was trying to do right by you both, Tawny retorted.
That wasn't the way to go about it,
Greta informed her.
It was the only way I knew how,
Tawny snapped. Greta let that ludicrousness go and asked,
And my father?
Your father what? Tawny asked back.
This is the first time I've ever heard about Andy's dad. So what about my dad? Who was he?
Did you know him? Should I know him?
He was a waste of space,
Tawny answered.
A punk ass getting his rocks off with an underage girl. And when that had consequences, he scraped me off. I was 17, Greta. He was 22. I needed help. He didn't have a lot, but he could have helped me. He wanted nothing to do with you, and the 15,000 times I asked him to help after I had you, he still wanted nothing to do with you. Eventually got himself a wife, made himself a family. I even showed at their place with you standing at my side, holding my hand. And that bitch shut the door in our faces. So fuck him, and fuck her. Because never, not once, did he show asking for his girl. He knew where I was, where you were, and he didn't give a single shit. I'd even see their asses out in Denver, and he'd look right through me. You were with me. He didn't even look at you.
Greta had no response to that. She just turned her head away, and Hicks pressed closer to her back.
Greta, girl,
Tawny leaned in, and his woman looked back to her mother.
I got nothing. I got some clothes, that car, kicked out of my mobile home, sold all my shit I can sell, and I got $322 in my purse, and that's it. That won't even get me back to Denver.
So you're here to give Andy and me presents and ask for gas money, Greta guessed.
I'm here to see my boy, and yes,
she bit off the last word,
my girl for Christmas.
Mom, although you've never used this tactic, I'll warn you now, pretending to be nice won't work. Tawny's voice was rising.
You broke my life.
You broke your own life, Greta shot back.
Then I broke his,
Tawny screeched. Greta went still. Hicks went still. Tawny stood before them, panting.
Do you have any clue? Any clue?
Greta's mother's head jerked to the side. Her hands came up in fists, her head jerked back, and she whispered,
He was so beautiful.
Yes, he was, Greta whispered back. He still is.
I would, sometimes I'd look at the two of you and think God got it wrong. God wouldn't saddle me with that. God wouldn't give me the ability to make something that beautiful and then weigh me down with it. The biggest diamond in the world could be the size of a boulder, and you might want it. But you couldn't wear it on your finger. 'Cause you couldn't do nothing but that, seeing as it was weighing you down.
So we were nothing but a weight, Greta said quietly.
You had babies, you'd get me,
Tawny replied.
I did have a baby, Mom. And the only time in my life growing up with you I felt light was when I was with Andy.